So I'm a master's student in the geography department, and it's my second year. And I'm interested in, my thesis is going to be on the history of Eagle Heights Community Gardens and what they've been as a place to people, how they've changed over time, if they've changed very much over time. I'm interested in food and landscapes and how we live in places and what that means for the land and development and planning and things like that. Excuse me?
Okay. You're echoing quite a bit, so
Am I echoing quite a bit? I'm on speakerphone, and let me see if I can arrange this a little bit better, because I can't hear you very well either.
Yeah, so that's something I might have you call my landline back.
Okay.
It's on at home.
Okay. What's your landline number?
That might be better, because with the recording of the speaker, it might go in and out.
Mm-hmm.
It's 406.
406.
493.
Mm-hmm.
1024.
1024. Okay, I will hang up and call you right back.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Hi, Terry. Oh, you sound much, much better now. Can you hear me? Okay. Yes, I still have a little bit of an echo, but it's not nearly as bad.
Okay, good. I think it may also be I'm sitting in a big empty classroom, and so it might also be the room echoing around me that you hear, so I apologize for that. So that's a bit about my research, or what I'm trying to think about. This garden, and I've started by asking people just what were the gardens like when you were there, and what do you remember most about them?
I remember that the gardens were a big kind of a community event.
Mm.
We had not gardened before when we had started, so it was our first attempts at gardening, and whoever wanted to be involved in the garden, had the opportunity to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of joint effort going on to make the gardens work for the residents. It was a community project.
Mm.
Where there was a board, an elected board that had some duties to get the gardens up and running and portioned out and stuff like that. But
mm-hmm.
then it was also a place, though, even though if you didn't have a garden, you could go and you could look and watch or, go with somebody who did. And I think that's what I had done the first year we were there, is I went to help somebody with their garden. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. And so then became interested in participating.
Mm. When were you a gardener at Eagle Heights? Or when did you move to Eagle Heights, and how long were you gardening there?
Yeah. I moved there in 79. And we probably gardened 80, 81, 82, and 83.
Okay. So 4 years?
Yeah, because we were living in 84, so.
Mm-hmm.
I think I helped with, maybe helped some of the prep that did not garden that year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was it a friend of yours who brought you out to the garden in the first place, from like a neighbor in the apartments or something?
A neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a neighbor. And then there's the, I was involved with, there was a little, there's a community center
mm-hmm.
there, And it must have been like 81 through, or 82 to 84, I was grade 3, 84, somewhere in there, I was a teacher at the preschool that was there in the center. And there was also a little store that was a co-op store. Mm-hmm. That we took turns running, so, you know, so I was involved with that. And then my husband helped with the Eagle Hike newsletter, which was a newsletter that was printed for residents.
Mm-hmm.
So we were real involved in the community, and then so the garden was one of those activities that just was sort of a natural fit for
mm-hmm.
our involvement in the community.
Yeah. And you said in an email that you were the chair, or you were at least on the garden committee, and how was that run, or what? Yeah.
I didn't catch that.
How was that run? Excuse me.
Well, there was a board, and I joined the board. I think for 1 or 2 years before I became president, and then George, and I don't remember his last name. I was looking for, I had some paperwork, but we had recently moved back to Montana, and so I have some papers, information, and a book from that time, possibly. I haven't found it yet.
Oh, okay.
But if I find it, I can let you know. But yeah. There was a board of probably, you know, 6 to 8 people, and then there were garden meetings that, you know, anyone who wanted to garden, you know, could attend. And basically, what that board did, and anyone who attended, there were some, you know, committees we had, you know, set up and cleanup committees. We hired someone. We had someone. You know, there was a map of the land, and it had been sectioned out into, you know, plots. And so then we had, you know, arranged for someone to come in and till all the area at the beginning of the year. And then one committee's job was to go and, you know, one day activity was to go and stake out, you know, according to the map, you know, put the stakes and strings up and then, you know, label this is, you know, 101, 102. Mm-hmm. And so all the garden plots had a number.
Okay.
And then if you were, you know, involved or you worked on the garden, there was, you know, you got to pull a number first. And so, like, if I was, you know, involved in that, you got like a one step up priority for choosing your garden spot. So, and so, you know, maybe, you know, 30 or 40 spots were taken by the, you know, the first wave of volunteers, and then anyone else could sign up. And I think it was a nominal fee for a garden. It was $20 or $25 for a garden spot, and that was to help, you know, pay for the tilling and, you know, the materials needed to rope off the gardens. And once in a while, if there was a large infestation or something, and most of the time, everyone's garden, you know, was on their own for what they wanted to use and stuff like that. Try to do a section that was more, you know, organic gardening, that people were going to say they're not going to use anything, and then across the way they're using. So there were committees set up, you know, and then at the end of the season we had, you know, to take everything down, take all the stakes down, and do things like that.
Yeah. So what did you mean by sometimes there are large infestations of something, and what would you do about those?
You know, there were bugs on people's plants, and some people like to use potting for them, and others wanted to do total organic gardening and didn't want any spraying. But I think at one point in the season or near the end, there was some sort of a, and I'm not good with that kind of stuff, so I don't know what it was, but there, maybe it was like at the end of the season, natural nutrients were sort of, you know, or when it was tilled, compost, you know, was sort put in, and, you know, those people in, with those expertise helped decide what was the best thing to put in the soil when it was being tilled and stuff. So, even there's having come from Montana to Wisconsin, there's lots of bugs there that we didn't have. So I know, you know, we had, I don't think, you know, I mean, we never did, you know, like a total bomb of the area or something, but sometimes there were discussions of pest control and what could be used and what couldn't be, and there were recommendations made because, like, you know, I was new to gardening, and so in the newsletter that we put together, it was also, you know, education and informational. You know, if you're having this kind of bugs on your broccoli, these are some things that we would recommend. And so they were more, tended to be the not spray and bomb kind of stuff, but the sort of first level chemical to, you know, try to take care of it or something, so that it wouldn't infect other people's gardens, but also that it was environmentally friendly. They try to go with the most environmentally friendly kind of option first.
Where was you also?
But that, you know, that, you know, education was important, you know, for people like myself who hadn't gardened before, and for people who came from a very different climate. You know, that had never seen these kinds of bugs or things, and then how do you get rid of them? And do you? Sometimes that was an issue because some people were like, well, we don't care if there's bugs, we're not going to do anything.
Where was the, you said that you tried to set aside a part that was mostly organic. Was that going when you got there, or did you instate a, you know, these
no,
roads
that
are going
was
to...
more, it was all part of, it was all part of the same slot on the side of the hill. As you look at the Eagle Heights, it's on the right side of the hill. It was just a piece of that. You know, people that didn't want to use any chemicals and didn't want anyone near them who used any chemicals, we sort of put them to one end of the garden, you know?
I've been trying to piece together when an organic section started, and so it was at least going by 80, because it is now all organic, but
organic.
So it's hard to tell when.
And it was a lot organic because, I think it was a lot organic because many of the gardeners from other countries tended to be more organic gardeners. And I think, you know, even the things, the kind of products I used, I think were very, you know, that I learned to use were very mild chemicals that were going to just stay on that plant and weren't drifting and stuff like that. So they were very, you know, the people who wanted to do organic gardening or close to organic gardening, you know, but sometimes there's especially with so many different kinds of foods and, being grown, there was big opportunity for, you know, infestation from one, you know, slot that butts up against another garden. So sometimes there, I know there were some things that they, you know, were recommending that if you don't want to lose all of your, you know, green beans or peas, this may be something that you want to try, you know, to use. But they were pretty mild kind of chemical kind of things. So I think there was a big emphasis even at that time on trying to be natural organic and do no harm. And that was the big thing, do no harm to the land and the soil.
What else did you talk about in committee meetings? Were there ever any controversies that came up about how people could guard the rules that you had about gardening? What were the rules that there were about gardening?
Well, sometimes, you know, yes, there's always sort of skirmishes when you have different people with different views. And I remember that's one of the reasons why I took over as chair. My predecessor was a little bit more, great guy, but he also sort of pushed controversy instead of, you know, sort of saying, how can we work this out together, or wanted hard and fast rules, and we're, well, you know, everybody has different, you know, ways and means and ideas and stuff, so I was more the person to say, oh, let's look at the situation, let's figure it out. There were controversies at times. I think most of them you know, sometimes people felt someone took their garden slot, or you know, when we first were staking out, you know, there was something like, no, that's not the one I signed up for, you know. And so, you know, just getting everybody to their place, the right spot, and, you know, this is yours. And then, or they didn't then like what the person next to them was growing. It was encroaching onto their, you know, spot, because they wanted to, you know, or they were, their neighbor was planting something that wasn't compatible with what they wanted to plant, you know, on the line. So there were some little skirmishes like that. We had some problem with theft during the year. I think in the years I was there, we had one time where we did have kind of a, like, the somebody or group went through the whole garden and just took a lot of food. And then there were times when just, you know, like my row of carrots would be gone or something.
Wow.
And people would, you know, complain about that periodically. And it was always the board's view when I was on there that, except for the big one that they went through and they took more food than they needed, if people were hungry in Eagle Heights and they were stealing, kind of in quotes, food from gardens from neighbors, they must be desperate. They can have the food. And we always then, I think after the second year, we had a plot that was up near the front that people would sort of throw their extra seeds and stuff in that was, you know, and then we would have volunteers, you know, like when you're up at yours, we also kind of weed, you know, this spot. We had sort of a, and that was another committee. So we had one spot that was sort of like, if you want garden produce, please take some of this, you know. And so there was sort of signage on there that, you know, you can have anything in this spot, but leave the rest of our stuff alone. And you know, maybe there was something in there, like someone grew watermelons and I didn't, and so it was like, oh, you know, I'll try a watermelon. And then the food that was ripe, that wasn't, you know, taken from there, would be taken over to the little store that we had at Eagle Heights, and then just sold or given away there. So there was a committee, or, you know, our group that their job was, you know, each week to check out that garden. Was there something that needed to be taken out and over to the store so it didn't, you know, just rot or something? So that was one. But, and there were always sort of neighbor skirmishes here or there. And so they would come to the board, and, you know, and then we'd have to resolve, you know, land, you know, issues. he's taken over some of my spot, or he's done this, or she's done that. So little stuff like that, nothing ever real big, but, you know, there's some and then what we did learn over the years, were there were certain people from different countries, and we learned that maybe it was good not to put the Turkish people next to, you know, these people. The kinds of food they grew were not very compatible. And they weren't very friendly with one another. You know, and so and that was also true of someone from the South wasn't compatible with someone from the West or United States then, you know.
That's fascinating.
And there's a couple people that just weren't compatible with anybody, we try to put them, you know, over here. You know, in a smaller, you know, place where they're going to have fewer neighbors, because, you know, every year they complain all the time, you know. And so there's just, so you have, whether you're working in work or whatever, there's just personalities, and, you know, that something was never right for Sam, and so you try to get Sam in a spot that, and try to carefully handpick some of his neighbors so that he's just going to minimize the problem or issue. So
Yeah, that's the complicating part of community gardens, is that people have to be near each other. That's one of the points, but it's also one of the tensions.
Yes. And cooperate. And we had some times where we did, opening day, trying to get everybody out there. You know, it was tilled. We needed lots of people to help stake out areas and, to try to make it a community effort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if it started getting like the weeds were bad, I think the university would get after us to say, hey, lots of, bugs, mosquitoes, whatever coming in, your gardens aren't being weeded well. We would, then have a weeding day. And so it's like, you come out. If you can't come out, you let us know. If you need help, let us know. But, we would have to kind of sweep through the whole gardens. And like, if you had a garden spot and, I was next to you and you hadn't tended yours for weeks, you could report that to the board, and then we would contact your neighbor and say, look, you're not doing this, are you able to do it, are you not able to do it, any longer would you like us to, give the garden to somebody else, or break your ankle and you just need help, can we help you for a couple weeks,
Yeah.
Like that, you're finishing your dissertation right now, we'll take care of it,
Uh-huh.
When you come back, you can help us do yours and then help with somebody else who's in the same situation. So we try to do, the board did some of that too, or if somebody abandoned their plot, we would, get that figured out and then try to get it reassigned.
Mm-hmm. So how did that work? Oh, 1 second. Do you have class in here?
No.
I'm doing an interview. Right. I put a note on the door. Is it okay if I'm in here for a minute?
Okay, I just wanted to take a look at the map.
Okay.
2 seconds.
Okay. Sorry, here.
Hello.
Hi, Terry. Sorry, I was just pausing because I wasn't sure how loud something would be.
You have some subjects coming in?
No, I'm doing an interview right now on the phone. Don't worry about it. Sorry, Terry. Somebody just walked in. I'm interested in. So the committee or the board worked with people to take care of weedy plots, but were there rules about the weeds, or was it just something that you tried to take care of? There were rules. So what? Yeah.
Yes, and I know, and see, I may have that still in my Eagle Eye file, and I can find that. And I am looking for it, sort of. I have an idea where that might be. But there was rules, yes, how much we paid when you took the garden over, there was a little rule book that you got, when you paid your $25 and, the rules, you can't grow marijuana out here. There's a couple things you couldn't grow.
Uh-huh.
Well, because we did have some ambitious farmer who, that was their whole plot 1 year.
Oh, really?
It was finally before we came, so, they had to make a rule. No, you cannot grow marijuana in your garden out here, so, along with the other stuff, the whole thing, and someone had a whole garden, and some people just had a row or two. No, you can't do that here. So there were rules like that. So the rules were, were things like that. And then there were some rules about, the kinds of pesticides and things that you could not use,
mm-hmm.
couldn't use. And so in the handbook, there's little ones that, little rules that say, here's what we recommend, here's what you cannot use.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you do find that handbook, I would love to.
Yeah.
Maybe see a copy or, if you could scan it to me. I don't know. I haven't seen the rules from that time. But,
But, it wasn't real long. It was more, be kind to your neighbor. Make sure your weeding is done. If you have problems with your weeding, call the board.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
So that we can assist,
Mm-hmm. Now, were the... Was the weed rule in effect because the university would, because of how the university reacted if the weeds got too high? Why was there the weed rule?
Yes, there was the weed rule because I think how the university reacted, we had to keep the land and it had to, you know, be well tended. It couldn't be, you know, turned into a marshland that was going to cause problems, you know, or health problems for residents.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to keep it. And there were some people who were meticulous gardeners. I mean, there was not a scrap of weed in there. You know, mm-hmm. their garden, you know, they worked it by hand, incredibly immaculate. And they would get really peeved next to somebody who was a weed, you know, who was just like, well, if it grows, it grows. And,
yeah.
You know, let nature take its course. Mm-hmm. They weren't very compatible gardeners.
No.
So, you know, so there were some weeding rules. And that was one of the committees, now that I'm saying that some things are coming back, one of the committees was sort of a weed patrol.
Mm.
You know, then, so they would walk through the gardens, and then if your plot was particularly bad, you know, they'd give you a call.
Mm.
Well, it looks like, you know, there was probably some rule of, you know, how much or inches, or is it starting to encroach on your neighbors around you, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
And or someone could complain, uh-huh. You know.
Yeah.
No, but there was a weed committee that, you know, went through it. You know, it had to be pretty bad. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, you have a weed there. You know,
yeah.
It had to be pretty bad. So mm-hmm. It was hard to see the vegetables or flowers for the weeds.
Yeah. Yeah. What else? What other relationships did you have with the university? Did it any besides the university sometimes contacting you to say that the weeds had gotten too bad?
No, I think just that at the beginning there were, you know, there was just an understanding of the land use and what we could use it for and not. And at that point, it was all, you know, for personal gardening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one grew stuff and sold it,
mm-hmm.
you know, for produce and stuff. So it was, you know, for our own, you know, use kind of thing, and or to be given to the, and sold at the community co-op store mm-hmm. that we had. Was only, you know, so like I couldn't go out and, I think we let people have up to 3 slots, which was really quite a bit of land.
Yeah.
You know. But, I kind of remember that, you know, we didn't have anyone, you know, like selling it in the farmer's market or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you would have, like, someone sign up for 3 lots so that they were next to each other, but then it would be, like, 5 or 6 families from their country would all together.
Mm.
So the 3... You know, there might be a group of families that went in, and or even sometimes it was a group of families that went in on just one slot, because they were pretty big.
Yeah.
I thought they were pretty big.
Yeah. Yeah, they're still pretty large.
Right. And then my interest is, I was there getting a, my husband was doing his PhD, and I was doing a master's degree in family and consumer science.
Mm.
So a lot of my interest was in the food preservation, taking it out of the garden and, you know, freezing or canning or those kinds of things. And so we did do some education on what to do with the produce from your garden, how to preserve properly. And so in our newsletter and things, we did some food preservation information techniques and stuff, because that was my area of interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I saw in the newsletter that you could rent a canner from the co-op. Were you part of getting that canner set up?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So you could, you know, and then how to use it properly, mm-hmm. you know, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot, like we had purchased a small freezer, because we were there in the days when the refrigerators were from the counter down, they were the counter size mm-hmm. refrigerators was all that we had, period. So.
Mm-hmm.
So we had purchased a small chest freezer, And I did mostly freezing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not particularly fond of pressure canning.
Yeah.
I can do it, but I like water bath, and so I can do water bath. And so a lot of people did a lot of, pickles and tomatoes and things like that with water bath canning and mm-hmm. freezing. And then some people did the pressure canning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think freezing was the number one way to preserve the food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and did it usually last you most of the winter, or did you feel as though you got your money's worth from your plot?
Oh, yeah. No, it lasted most of the winter, and the food was, fresh and homegrown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And delicious.
Yeah. And we would also do some trading. Mm-hmm. Up there, and I think there was two-thirds of the way through the season, we would have kind of another kind of just clean up the gardens kind of day and stuff. And we would, encourage people to come out, kind of have a, I think maybe we had drinks,
mm-hmm.
Stuff like that, and that we could share stuff or mm-hmm. trade stuff in our gardens.
Oh, yeah.
So, I didn't ever plant corn, but maybe I could trade. I had this, I could trade for some corn, or very interesting vegetables were grown, mm-hmm. from people with different nationalities.
Mm-hmm.
So, or even a different kind of, people from the South would grow a different kind of bean than we grew out in the West.
Mm-hmm.
So, we would have kind of a swamping day and, tasting.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning, when we were planting the garden, we had one of those kind of days, too. So, we had a table up at the front. So, if I planted one row of beans and that's all I wanted, I could put the seeds up on the table and someone else could come along and take that, the rest of the package of beans and use them and put their package of celery there.
Mm.
And so, there was also some sharing going on of the seed packages.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was one group, it also reminded me, there was a group that ordered seeds from somewhere. So one of the committees was you could sign up and order seeds and pay for them. Because there was there was a couple places they recommended. And I think one of them was local, and so it was more, we're going to, or the committee would, you could sign up for some and they would buy some and then they would, they would sell the seeds at the beginning of the season, too.
Okay.
The sort of common ones.
Yeah.
And then there was the trading going on, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You could use half your package and, pick them up and trade them for half a package of something else.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nice. There's still a share shelf.
Right.
They're not days, but there's something that's called the share shelf, where if you have extra produce, you just leave it there, and people can take it or leave it. And yeah, which is a good... But things still go to waste. There's still lots of rotting.
Oh.
Because people leave during the summer, they aren't there, there's just too much and
right.
things.
Right.
An overabundant landscape.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I wanted to maybe go back. I read in the newsletter that, and I don't know this story yet, and I think the chair of the board before you was George Kerr. Is that right? Maybe?
Yeah, George.
And in one of the newsletters it said, oh, we'd like to thank George for, changing these, making big changes to these gardens. And I think that was in 80 or 81. And I was wondering if you were there, and if you remember a shift in how the gardens were run at that time or anything like that. I don't know if there was.
I think the big shift there, and I said, kind of like George's in there, well, we're going to do it this way. I think things were kind of loose, and there was lots of those kind of spats going on.
There's lots of those what going on?
The spats between neighbors and complaints and stuff like that. So I think George was the one that kind of, said, okay, let's get together and let's do this and let's, you know, negotiate. And if these people can't be civil, let's put them over here so they're at the end of the row. And even if they don't want to be there, that's too bad, you know. And there was, you know, so instituted sort of like three strikes and you're out, you know, kind of thing. If you won't take care of your garden and you won't do this, and, you know, mm-hmm. then you're belligerent, you're out. You know, yeah. And so he sort of instituted things like, we can vote you off of the gardens if you can't be, mm. you know, if you come up, you know, and just sort of meet some of those civil ways of working with people. So I think those are some of the big changes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I also think also doing some negotiating between those people that want it totally organic and nothing, and kind of needing to, that was reasonable in some ways and in some ways not, just because of the number of people that were living close by, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like we were organic gardening a huge acreage, you know, you had a little garden spot with other people, and the idea of community garden was you have to work as a community. So
mm-hmm.
those are mostly what I think about by seeing those big changes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of getting some more of those kind of rules and regulations down a little tighter. And
mm-hmm.
and then if people were problematic, dealing with those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you also mentioned that you had to be elected to the board, or was it a volunteer committee?
Trying to remember. I do think that there were, I mean, anyone could come and join, but you were elected. You know, you had to sort of say, yeah, I'd be willing to serve,
mm-hmm.
and you got elected. Even kind of informally, it wasn't a real formal
yeah.
process.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Did you ever have too many people to fill the garden? I mean, too many people who wanted garden plots compared to plots, and how many plots were there? Do you have any idea?
I don't remember very well. That's something I don't remember very well.
Yeah.
We usually filled up all the gardens.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we had to sort of, you know, I know a couple of years we had to drum up people, and then a couple of years you've got more than, you know, you need, and there's a couple of people we have, you know, gave them half plots, or
mm-hmm.
if they came after the deadline or something, and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and there was always people that had anticipated being able to garden, but then couldn't fulfill, so
mm-hmm.
we usually were always able to accommodate someone, or, you know, it might have been, well, this isn't what you planted, but would you like this spot?
Yeah.
And these people are moving, you know.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of that kind of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think we were always able to accommodate everybody. To me, there was a lot of plots, but I just can't remember what the lot was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. What did you call the gardens? Just the garden? The garden?
I think it was just Eagle Heights Gardens.
Eagle Heights Gardens. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I just this morning, I was like, I have no idea what people have, what its name has been. And that, I mean, I'd like to know when we changed it to Eagle Heights Community Gardens rather than just mm-hmm. Eagle Heights Gardens or the gardens.
In the newsletter you have there, does it say Eagle Heights Community Garden or does it say Garden?
No, I think in the newsletter, especially since it's the Eagle Heights newsletter, a lot of times
uh-huh.
it just says, oh, and the garden will be opening on this day and closing day is
yeah.
this day and we need people to help pick things up on this at
mm-hmm.
this time, things like that.
On this day and that
yeah.
day, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of the newsletters are just the announcements and then the
yeah.
garden news.
Yeah, my husband was the English major and he helped with the newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
For
mm-hmm.
Eagle Heights.
Yeah.
I think that's how you got his name first.
Yeah, it's just strange that I didn't see yours as a chair, but I must say, who knows what I was. Oh, because he was a student, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you were
a
student, too.
Also.
You were a student, too,
but,
so I don't know. I was
a student from 81 to 83, I understood.
Yeah. Yeah. The gardens. Were there problems with translations? If everybody was coming from so many different countries, did you ever have problems communicating with those people?
We did once in a while, and so once in a while we were sometimes because the student maybe wasn't the one who was gardening; it was a spouse or a parent.
Yeah.
That was doing a lot of the gardening, and so sometimes we did have to find someone who spoke the language, who then we could say this, this seems to be a problem or issue, and, But usually they were rather small, and or sometimes we wanted to find out what was growing or how or why were they doing it that way. The garden was very successful, very beautiful, and so sometimes it was, talking with the family that had the plot and figuring out, who could speak English well enough to tell us what was doing. I remember there was a man with his wife and his mother were actually doing the gardening, and it was absolutely gorgeous garden. An elderly Chinese woman was doing most of the gardening. And so we just wanted her to show us how she was doing some of the stuff. So it was also kind of, when we'd spot something that was interesting, some of the people were very interested in learning the techniques or the philosophy of why are you doing it that way. Sometimes we needed a translator.
It's hard to explain that. It's complicated.
And or the person that was actually out there in the field that we would, say hello to or not to was not English speaking. Speak English.
Did you have compost piles and mulch piles in the gardens?
We did.
And did the committee have to arrange to get
that? I think yes, there was a committee that worked with compost.
It's well organized. And what did you grow?
My skill was the organization.
Your skill was
I didn't know a lot of the gardening itself, but my skills have always been in organization and, with the reaching out, contacting people, negotiating, getting stuff done. So that was what my contribution was.
In a place like this,
I knew who to call if it was an insect problem, or I knew who to call if it was a compost problem.
Going back to I'm just remembering we were talking about the insects, and did the committee ever cover the whole garden in something to take care of infestations, or was just individual plots deciding to do something about insect invasions?
I think it was only or mostly just individual plots. I have a vague recollection of 1 year needing to do something for the whole area, but I don't know if it was just adding more nutrient to the soil, because we did the soil test each year. And so it might have been we needed to put more nitrogen in the soil or something, in the whole soil. And so, and that's what we used these for if we needed, for the general tilling, and then if the soil sample said it was too alkaline or too, acidic or something, I'd say that wasn't my expertise, but we had that done. And so I think once or twice we added something when they went in and tilled, we added something to the soil to make it healthy.
Is there anything you thought I would ask you about that I haven't yet?
No, I don't think so.
Do you Do you have any pictures of the gardens when you were there? That's another thing I've been asking people.
One of my favorite pictures, I have a picture of our older son, who was in, because my parents had bought us a big red wagon so that we can go over to the garden with the baby. And so then I think, if I can find it, one of my favorite pictures that I remember is of him, you know, having fallen asleep in this wagon and, you know, being filled with vegetables all around him. So, nice. He'd garden for a while and then he would go to sleep. Or on the way back, because, you know, she lived way over in the 900s, and so it was quite a walk. And so the gardens to our place. And so he would often fall asleep in the wagon on the way back. So I might.
You might. I'd love to see any that you have if you do dig any up.
Okay.
That'd be great. Maybe get a real sense of a place when you see it and. Yeah, when you see it in photos. Are there any questions you'd like to ask me about what the gardens are like now or anything that I've learned in this process?
So the gardens are still going.
Yep.
And they are, because sometimes you always need volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, throughout my career, sometimes you can get things done, and sometimes things are, they just go by the wayside because you don't have the people power that you need, and especially in that situation where, you know, most of us were students and, you know, doing other things, that wasn't the only thing we were doing. It's difficult to pull that off, so I'm happy to hear that they are still going.
Yeah.
And you said they're organic, fully organic?
Yeah, they're now totally organic, and I think that change happened in 1996, I believe. They switched to all organic. The other change that happened around that, or maybe it was 95 that they went all organic. I'm forgetting my dates. But they're also now perennial plots, so they're not tilled every year like you did, but they're permanently staked out, and so people really feel ownership over some of their plots because they can have the same one every year.
Every year,
perennials, and so there are raspberries and strawberries and lilies and rhubarb, asparagus, people do garlic, you know, you can have these perennial plots, and I think that's probably one of the bigger changes.
And do you have people, and my other question was, you know, because I say we had some family groups, or not so much family groups, but even, I would say nation groups, that would get together and do several plots together. Mm-hmm. Do you have anyone who, are they letting anybody garden there and then, like, sell at the farmer's market leftover?
No, it's not. I think that that has happened in the past, that people were selling at the market. But you're not allowed to do that because it's on state-owned land. The university, since it's on university land, which is state-owned land, and that was an issue, I think, around 2000, that all of the land was, you know, the university suddenly became interested in that piece of land again, and there were a lot of land use issues, and whether the gardens would remain was a problem, and some of the university was worried about people maybe selling their produce at the market, and also the number of community members had increased, so there weren't, it wasn't just Eagle Heights residents or students, there are also now community members who garden there. And the university got worried that it wasn't just a student place anymore, and you know, so no, nobody, but there are still, the international students are a big force in the garden, and I don't know that they sign up in blocks. I should ask the person who assigns that now, but they definitely want plots near each other. If it's not maybe five or six families to three plots, there's still, I think that the international connection and the nation groups is still very
right,
present.
And the type of food and the type of gardening practices and stuff.
What were the major nationalities that were gardening there? You mentioned Chinese, but who else was prominent?
Korean, several Asian countries. Mm-hmm. The Chinese, Korean, a lot of Korean at the time, some Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. We had a fairly good sized Turkish group and Iranian. They're actually the Iranians and Iraqis were actually somewhat cooperative at that time, and so and spoke similar language, and so there were some, you know, cause I know from the preschool too. There was they had differences, but they collaborated on things. So they kind of liked to be near gardening because they had similar foods, similar gardening practices. Mm-hmm. There's two or three families that I've still had some contact with. Mm. Or I had some contact with for some years after. I don't now.
Were they gardeners? And would you be able to tell me their names so I could potentially get in contact with them? Because one thing I haven't been able to do is, because the garden committee was primarily Americans, and those are the records I have of people, and then the Americans usually associated with other Americans. I don't really have a record of how all of the international students viewed the gardens, and I don't know if it's any different than you did, but it's something that I'd like to try to do a little bit.
This book that I'm looking for, which is my Eagle Heights directory. And then I think possibly, particularly a couple of the Korean families, would there be a possibility of finding them?
I think that because I have access to the Wisconsin Alumni Directory, and so I would be able to at least find their address, maybe, if I knew their names.
And so with the women I knew in the nursery, that one was a student, but one was her husband was. But if I can find that directory again, you know, that's my old address. That's what I'm looking for.
Well, if you would look, and then you could email me, and that would be fantastic. I would really appreciate that. That would be very helpful.
All right. Yeah, it would probably be over the next couple weeks. You know, weekends that I'm looking because we bought some bookshelves and we're unpacking some more of the books boxes that we have.
No, that's completely fine. It's been. Mm-hmm. I'll still be working away on this for quite a while. Hopefully not too long. But
and
yeah.
So, because it was a little more echoey at the beginning, your overall hope or part of the project is to just kind of do this. This history. When you said that with University of Michigan land use, that was one thing too. Even in the early 80s, you know, that we were looking at, we had to be good stewards of the land because there was the thought that the university was always like, well, but if we need more housing, that's a nice hunk of land, or if we need a new build, you know. So that was one of the, you know, main reasons why we had a board and why we were keeping it. And you know, if the university relation part was important because we wanted to maintain the land.
Yeah, and who did you interact, who in the university did you interact with? Do you, you remember?
No clue.
No.
Yeah, no,
okay.
I don't. But probably facilities. Mm-hmm. No, I know that up in Eagle Heights, there's, you know, they have their office over there where they, you know, do the rent and then, you know, the all the yard and lawn work and stuff. That I think it was from them, starting with them and then going to the university. Or management pieces up there in Eagle Heights. But then the whole land use was, you know, of course, beyond them. It was whoever at the university in charge of land use kept looking at that plot of land. How many people are going? Well, maybe that's not enough to make it worthwhile, because if we've got this many more students coming in.
And how did that come down to you? Did Did you just hear through the grapevine that maybe the university was interested in it, or did you get some communications from the university, or?
No, it was communication from the university.
Oh, so they actually, you know, sent something to you.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Would you have kept anything like that? I'm digging through the university archives and not finding anything that has
I didn't keep anything like that.
Okay.
I think, you know, and more the year George was the president, that was, you know, I remember he having discussions and things with the university and then he passing the information on to me, but it's, I think we know we did have notebooks and minutes and things like that, and I don't know. At some point, probably people thought their archive.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I think they.
You get rid of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I know that I did not have to do much talk or negotiation, you know, with them. But the year before I was president, there was a lot of talk.
Mm-hmm.
They did, you know, I mean, they came out and they're measuring the land. Like, you know, what can we do with this? And, you know, you know, well, there's other things we could do. You know, I just remember, yes, there was a lot of interest in the following.
That's interesting. And it's good to trace down these different land use tensions or interests. So that would, the year before you were...
Yeah, so it would have been 1980. 79, 80, somewhere in there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, somewhere late, yeah. 79, 81, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And that was another thing we needed to make sure we filled up the gardens and it was being fully utilized, that we weren't using half the place and not the other half, because it's like, well, we don't use this fully, we will not get to keep this land.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you still have as much as there was originally, or I'm not sure.
I think we have a little bit less now than you had. There were finger plots or a peninsula, like the thumb, the peninsula. I don't know if you remember a jot of land, and maybe that wasn't even there yet. But on top of the hill, some of the rows were longer, and that's gone now. And then some plots all the way down at the bottom of the hill, I think, which at one point were the 400s and some of the 500s row. And I don't know if the row numbering is the same as it was when you were there. Those are also gone because horticulture needed new test plots or new test fields. And so those are now part of the horticulture department. Land, or they're in use by the horticulture department. So no, I don't think quite as much.
All right. Well, I probably better.
You better
get on to work.
Yes. Thank you so much for talking with me, and I look forward to hearing if you discover any names or anything.
Pictures or other documents.
Yes.
Okay. Great.
Thank you, Terry. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.